going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
And we welcome you to another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me, as always, Alan Medlock from Red Dirt Redbird, a Medlock1 on Twitter. It is Friday, June 5th. It is basically a month, 4 weeks. 4 weeks from today would be right before the 4th of July, when the Cardinals and other Major League Baseball teams would like to be playing. But Alan, I don't know, 4 weeks from, can you, after what we've seen this week, what we've seen over the last month, it really feels improbable that they're going to be on the field 4 days from today.
After every release, it seems further and further out. You know, I know exactly what you mean. I mean, I'm in complete agreement on that. It's everything we hear that gets played out in public, which a lot of it has, which I don't know if either one. I think that may be the plan, how they want to do it, is leak a lot of things to public, and that way the finger pointing starts. I don't know what I try to analyze the PR side on both, and it's tough to do, you know, right now, because you just don't know how much is leaked and how much is purposely leaked, and you know how much of these responses are supposed to be out. But everybody's been pretty open about their disdain of what's going on, and no one's really wrong, you know, in their own mind. But yeah, it's tough. It's tough to see that. I mean, I grow more and more skeptical by the week that things are going to get done, period. And it's one of those to where, like you and I were kind of going back and forth texting about this week. It's going to be one of those situations to where, yeah, they may announce tomorrow that they're going to play and they're going to act like everything is just great. And hey, that's how negotiations work. And we got through this and we're here for you. And we're going to show that this is going to be a healing, mechanism for the country. And I don't know if I think people are going to see through that too quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they may have missed their boat on the benefits of coming back, being the first one back, which they still might be, but it's still going to be with a black eye. But yeah, I mean, even to do so that quickly in a perfect scenario seems very unlikely.
Yeah, because you're looking at probably like we've said, a week to get players ready, and maybe 2 to 3 weeks for an actual spring training, and you know, we don't even have an agreement yet. They don't even know who's going to be going. They don't know a lot of things about this. So it's difficult, very difficult to figure out what they're doing, but you're right. I think that they had a chance to make some sort of goodwill gestures and things of that nature. And they just haven't. And now it's like, well, you're only agreeing because you got down to the last minute and realized that you had to. Because the option of not playing was so bad. It's not that you're wanting to play. It's not that you're going to create this, you know, like you said, healing, or you're wanting to play for the good of the country or anything like that. It's really going to boil down to, is it worth playing financially? And if it's not, you know, they may not. And I think that's, you know, we're seeing, you know, article today from Ken Rosenthal and Evan Delek, who have written a lot on this over the last week or two. And basically the players don't really think that the owners want to play ball this year. I mean, they really don't think that that's the case. And, you know, if they don't trust that the owners want to, then they're not going to trust anything the owners suggest to them. Now, this week we saw the players come along and offer 114 game schedule. They kind of eased up a little bit on a few things. You know, they were You know, if somebody wanted to opt out for health reasons, they got paid. But if they just wanted to opt out because like Mike Trout had a, has his baby coming or something like that, then, you know, then they didn't, they only got service time. They didn't get paid, things of that nature, which was a little bit of a, I don't want to say an olive branch, but at least some acknowledgement of what the owners were going through and some, a few things like that. And the owners basically just swatted it away and then decided they wouldn't even bother countering. And the next thing we know, we're hearing about them forcing in a 48 to 54 game schedule. And I got to tell you, to me, after all this, if they only play 50 or less games, I don't know that it's worth it, because this just doesn't feel like much of a season, and a season that would be so, so weird. You know, we talked about it during the week of how, what 50 games can look like, where poor teams were like the Nationals last year, 19 and 31 at that time, they would have been well out of the playoffs. And of course they were the team that won it all. It's difficult to see, you know, that kind of season really meaning anything.
Yeah, it's tough. That's when I read that report, I was like, that is just, it's almost insulting to see that come out. I was like, that makes zero sense. I mean, you play almost 30 games in spring. You know, it's ridiculous. And then to hear that it could be forced upon them, you just wonder, you're just like, okay, well, that's, you can pretty much count for, you know, your 50 games this year and none in 22, you know, after that, your agreement's up. I mean, that just doesn't seem to happen. I'm hoping that they can get to that 82 game mark. You know, like I said, I like the triple digits. I was hoping it'd stay around 100. That seems like that went out the window really quickly. I'm hoping that maybe that midway point about 82, they could do some things. Maybe I was naive in thinking that it wasn't as big as a big a deal, but the pushback on playing into those fall games was surprising, as hard as some of the ownership has come out publicly about not wanting to play into November, because I thought, you know, when everything was done in March, I thought that's exactly the direction they were going to go. But now it seems like that's off the table. And there's very little interest from some of these teams, ownership-wise, to do it. So, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, the water is so murky right now. You know, just me personally, I hope they get to the midway point. I know I've said it way too much when I'm talking, but it's almost insulting to play anything less than that. I mean, it's like, hey, you wanted baseball, this is how you're going to get it type situation. And I just don't like it. It just doesn't sound like a lot of fun to me.
No, and you're right. They're very likely to use this as an issue, you know, that's going to cause really flare up when they're talking about the CBA. Whether that means there's a strike in 21 before it ends, or a very long gap of games in 22 as they try to negotiate something, I don't know, but it feels very, very unlikely that this is that these two sides could come to an agreement. They can't come to an agreement on what we're seeing today when there's this kind of pressure, this kind of outside, you know, how are you doing this during a pandemic? How are you doing this? You know, blah, 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 blah. You know, when it gets out of that range, when it gets out of that focus of the country, you know, and they don't have that pressure, how are they ever going to get anything done? And it just seems so unlikely that that's going to happen. So, we already knew that there were some bad issues coming. This has just accelerated it. This has really gotten us to the point where we don't, it's hard to imagine a full season of baseball for a while. And that's sad and scary and really dangerous for the long-term health of baseball too. And that's, you know, we keep seeing the different math that's out there and what this looks like and how much are they really losing and all that. And boy, you look at that and I know there's cash. We've talked about it. There's cash flow problems. You don't want to see people take losses, but when you look at losing it, what are they talking? Maybe $10 million, $20 million a year per team. And that varies. And that may be an understatement to some degree, but even so, to some degree, don't you? You try to suck as much of that up as you can, because it's an investment going forward. Because if you fight for a dollar today, you may lose $50 down the road. And just like normal, baseball doesn't want to take that long-term view. They're always trying to, you know, scrape every little bit they can right now and not worry about what's coming down the road.
Yeah, it's I wish I would have taken notes on this, but Passan was on the KBO broadcast this morning and talk about some of the things, and some of the monetary issues aren't as severe as you would expect to hear when it's like, well, we're only going to play 48 games because we can't afford this and this and this. And, you know, he made a comment about where the earnings could be a $300 million difference. And yeah, he meant that in a way of only $300 million difference, as opposed to what we think is going to be lost. I thought about this all week last week, to where, and it was a comment you made, and it makes total sense, to where billionaires can find money.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, but you're right. That's probably how they got there, by not having to do so. But if you play a season this year and you play an elongated season, not one that feels crammed down everybody's throat that you're doing it just to do it, mm-hmm, I would think that the losses aren't as severe on ownership as they are making this out. And it seems like the saving face would be much more valuable than what they would ultimately lose, which I don't think that may be as severe as we're being told it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, to some degree, again, you're right. Excuse me. You put this off as an investment today for better return tomorrow. And that's just not the way they look at it. And that's probably why we may not have baseball. I mean, I keep, about the time I, you know, write this whole off, I keep thinking, well, okay, then that's when they're going to swoop in at some last minute, you know, okay, we're going to give you this and we'll give you this and we're going to get something going. But, you know, this week, we talked about it last week. We talked about it a week before, how time was really getting there and they really needed to get something done. And if they don't have something done by X time, then the season, there's just not going to be time to fix the season. Well, I mean, we're getting to that point. I mean, the odds are nothing's going to happen this weekend. It doesn't necessarily mean that way. So then if you're talking about, you know, Monday or Tuesday, again, you're looking at 3.5 weeks before the 4th of July. And being that the owners are so hesitant, like you said, you're right. When they had this agreement in March, we thought, oh, we're going to have baseball at Thanksgiving. You know, we're going to have baseball closing in on Christmas time. You know, we're going to have neutral site playoffs in dome stadiums or in LA or whatever. And ownership seems to be, and I rightfully so, perhaps. Excuse me. It'll tickle my throat. Very focused on not losing the playoffs, because that's where the money is. You know, they can make a lot of money with playoffs. And so if a second wave shows up in October, they want to have most of their playoffs done by that time, or all of the playoffs done by that time. If it, you know, if they're playing ball and a second wave comes and everything shuts down and they've spent all this money and they don't get a playoff, that's hard on them. I get that, but man, I mean, they're talking, like I said, when you're talking 50 games or less and you start on the 4th, I mean, you're done by like mid, you know, late August. And you could be done with the baseball season and the playoffs before the NBA finished their playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems wrong.
Yeah, no, completely. And then when you put that in your post this week, I thought the same thing. I was like, you know, that sounds ridiculous, which makes me think that this 48 and 50 game, there's obviously financial means to it, you know, and Derek Gould did a good article about that, about why the 50 games makes a lot of sense to him. And like I said, I couldn't even do it justice by paraphrasing. So the it makes me think that the 50 games is, yeah, that they want 50 and they want 50 to start maybe August 1, you know, not July 4, July 1 at this point, yeah, because that just doesn't, I, I, it was disheartening to hear that whenever the Diamondbacks ownership came out so quickly and said, well, this is the sport that we just don't do November. I was like, well, that's what I thought it was going to be. I thought that this was some of the draw. I thought that was going to bring some of the fun back in a sport that, regard even without the coronavirus, that they were looked at as the boring sport and the, you know what I mean? They're trying to revitalize things, and it's tough. It's a tough look for baseball right now. It's disheartening, and it doesn't seem like his fans were getting the whole story, you know, in any of these negotiations, which of course we're not expecting to, but it seems like there's been a whole lot of smoke, more than we had even talked about whenever even the first initial Arizona plan came out.
Yeah. It's really funny. You know, we've talked a lot about baseball having this open window, this open field to be the only game in town, to be the one team that's playing. Honestly, right now, there's a chance November is that month. I mean, you have the NFL playing once a week or twice a week or whatever, but right now the NBA is planning to start training camps and stuff maybe in November, but they're not playing games until December. Hockey is probably going to have a similar thing because they don't even have a date for return, and they're going to have a round play-in type thing, and then they're going to have the playoffs, and you know that's going to run forever. It's going to run well past their normal start time of October. So they're going to have some time off. So you figure maybe a December or a January start for hockey next year. I mean, baseball has a chance to be, you know, that only game in town, or at least during the week. If they're playing in November. I get the idea of not wanting to risk another flare up of the virus. And I don't know how a second wave, how popular, how likely that is. But still, I mean, it feels like, I don't know, it just feels like you're being overly cautious. But again, I get it. The playoffs are all revenue. There's, you know, the expenses are much lower in the playoffs because there's no salaries, and you get all this ton of money because the contracts are bigger. So I get not wanting to jeopardize that, but, you know, 50 games, again, just seems like why bother, you know? And, you know, again, they could wind up settling around the 80, 82 mark still, but if they're going to do that, then they really have to get it done because they're not, you're going to run out of time real quick to play that many games.
Yeah. It just doesn't make a lot of sense how things are going right now. Danny Mac had a good point today. He said, if this happens and they don't come back, and you see the NHL and you see the NBA thrive in this really cool, fun rush to the finish, competitive, you know, late night games, you know, all kinds of stuff, and, you know, take over. At what point do these two professional sports look and think, hey, we can't compete with the NFL, but we sure can compete with baseball? And then they start encroaching on more of a spring, you know, run of things. Mm-hmm. And that could be tough. I don't necessarily see that, but there's nothing off the table right now for any of these leagues. I mean, and the NHL and the NBA have shown that if they want to start a little bit later and compromise the start of next year, they're willing to do just about anything. And it kind of sucks because baseball is just going to get lapped, and if they don't play, it's going to look really bad. And on a sport that arguably you could say was on thin ice anyway by the trouble attracting the younger viewership. And it's a scary time. I mean, it's when I start feeling apathetic toward the game, that is not a good situation.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we've found ways to fill that time. I think a lot of people have. I mean, there are times that it stands out. You know, I know this past Sunday, kind of felt like coming home after we came home from, you know, doing our church that, you know, we're helping do the live stream stuff, you know, came home and changed clothes and you felt like, hey, it's time to turn the ball game on.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything on, you know, there are times like that, but you know, on the day to day, I think we're finding ways to fill that time. And you do. You run a significant risk of especially really casual fans just not bothering to come back. And I agree. I could easily say, I mean, the NBA is often, nobody has paid attention to that. From what I understand, I don't watch the NBA at all. But from, you know, what you see online is people don't really pay attention to the NBA until Christmas anyway. You know, there's a big deal.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
You start your season then. You know, maybe you've got a chance to move that from January or from October to December, and you play from December to, I don't know, what would that be? Probably April, you know, as baseball's really getting started. Well, then all of a sudden the NBA playoffs are there. And by the time the NBA playoffs are done, then training camps are opening up and you don't have that chance to be on the national stage. And you know, it could easily be that way. And hockey the same way. Hockey might shift to maybe a January start. Maybe they go to a calendar year type of thing. I mean, I don't know how that works. Maybe not. They may be more of a November still. They may need to stay that way. But you know, you do run that risk of falling back and never coming back to it. Sure. Because you know, 94 did not help. You know, the strike is still, you know, as much as you've had a little bit of recovery and it's more, you know, obviously there's been a lot of money and a lot of resurgence and stuff like that, but you still don't have necessarily the hold on the country that you did before that strike. And you do something like this and then probably another work stoppage next year. I mean, you're going to be down to just some really devoted fans, and that's going to make it very difficult because there'll be a big correction coming when the, you know, when the TVs can't sell advertising, those contracts become, you know, a lot smaller. Mm. So, you know, but, but they're not looking at it. They're looking at trying to maximize for this year instead of realizing that they could lose 5, 10, 15% of their audience going forward just because they're not willing to compromise on this year.
Sure. And it goes without saying that where we were, and me personally, I was naive enough to think that this would be the ability to mend some fences and to move forward and to use it as a springboard for better talks. It has been anything but, right. You know, and I have a strong feeling they're going to try to ram it down our throats that, hey, that's just how negotiations go. I mean, we're hand in hand on this. We knew that we needed to come back, but I think that they've shot themselves in the foot on this. Yeah. I don't know. It just is not a good look all over, and people are forgetting about them. And it's troublesome. Going back to the NBA, a Thunder primetime game on Christmas around here generates as much buzz as one of the big college football games. And that says a lot, you know, in Oklahoma, that draws a lot of interest. And it would not be difficult for them to build on that to go into a later spring and to encroach on a little bit of baseball, where you lose a lot of a state like this that has minor league baseball, but not particularly any. You have close proximity, kind of like Arkansas, to, you know, some big league teams, but you lose a whole state of, or a strong number state of viewership in a situation like that.
Yeah, I mean, I know people that never came back after 94.
I agree. Same here.
I mean, I've had discussions with them. They'll tell me they were big fans. They really were all to it. And then 94 came and they never came back. They said, no, if it's going to be that greedy, if it's going to be that, you know, willing to do that kind of, you know, shutdown and lose a World Series over it, then I'm not coming back. And, you know, some people said that at one time and they finally did come back. Some didn't. And there's a real good chance. You're right. That, you know, this is a time where they'll say, okay, if you can't figure it out in a time where, you know, people are losing their jobs and, you know, there's not that much money to go around, you know, then forget it. Y'all can just, you know, play your game wherever you want to play it, but no, we're not going to be there. So I don't know. I think that, you know, when they do open for fans, it's going to be very interesting. Now, there was a report this week that Texas is looking to open things up to fans so that fans could come to professional sports by, I don't know when that was, sometime soon, right? I mean, it was this summer.
Yeah.
part of me thinks that that's another obstacle, because if people like the Rangers and the Astros can bring in fans, but teams like the Yankees, the Red Sox can't, you know, that's a fairly significant financial disparity. And I don't know how those owners tend to not like it when there's a big financial disparity among themselves. So I don't know that that helps, but if other states follow through, you wonder if that would change the play owner's tune to the point where we'll say, okay, we're going to play, you know, 50 games, you know, we're going to start July 1st. We're going to play 50 games. Then we'll get to August and we'll see. And if we can play with fans after this point, then we'll play another 2 weeks or 3 weeks or whatever in with fans. I don't know if they can do that, but it feels like maybe that's a chip that could be used. But then again, I mean, well, I guess we saw California's probably starting to open up a little bit too. I don't know about New York, but some of those big ones will have to be willing to let people come into the stadiums. And again, just because they'll let them in doesn't mean people will, although a lot of people will. But that puts another wrinkle into things. And when you're running out of time, adding new wrinkles isn't necessarily that helpful.
Yeah, that was kind of my first reaction to that deal as well. I thought, oh boy, this could get a little bit ugly. Then selfishly, I started thinking, oh, wait a second, what are the numbers in Missouri? You know what I mean? I'm like, am I willing to run this risk? You know, kind of thought the same thing. It's funny. Like right now, it's one of those where you're just like, let's just make it from point A to point B, and let's not worry about point C yet. Right, and then right. Texas being Texas is saying, no, we're going to throw C, D, and E right in your face. You know, there was a part of me that was like, hey, if they're willing to do that, they're going to have this, that may speed things up. And then you thought, well, some of these other states just can't, and that's going to really slow things down, because isn't the March agreement something that eliminates the revenue sharing? Or something along those lines.
I got the impression that if the fans were available in the seats, then it automatically, it's going to be that pro rata per game thing.
Okay.
I don't know if he spells it out or not. I mean, I guess there's a possibility they could argue about, but it seems to be, that's the impression that the only reason they could not do pro rata is because of no fans in the stands.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that kind of turns the crank a little bit, you know what I mean? I'm not sure how our follow is right now, but, you know, leave it to Texas to do that. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Well, I mean, if any state was going to be the first one to open up, I think it would be Texas.
Of course.
Because that's them, and, you know, we've seen it, except for Louisiana. It feels like the South has been, I mean, cases in Arkansas have gone up. Cases in Oklahoma, I think, probably have as well of late. But for the most part, you know, it hasn't been that bad overall. I mean, and so you could see a state like that, you know, with open spaces and a lot of people, but, you know, also the ability to have a little bit of room that maybe are willing to take that risk. We'll see. Now, I mean, if you got to go to sit in the vault in the stadium with your mask on and in half a stadium and they have to bring you food and you have to take a number to go to the bathroom. I mean, I don't know all the social distancing stuff, whether it's worth doing, but a lot of people will. And I mean, and you know, the ownership is going to be where if they can get half the stadium or a third of the stadium in there, that's much better than they were expecting, and they're going to jump on it.
I kind of thought about that. I was thinking, I think they'll rush to that more than they'll push against it. That does open up a whole new can of worms, doesn't it? It's crazy. I mean, and then like, I feel like I do not want to deadpan this at all. But I don't feel that there was 100% legitimacy in the ownership's fear of a second wave in the fall. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like that's a crutch. I mean, that's it. So I think that that would get blown out of the water really quickly if they can allow a number into the stadium.
It would do some. I think there is still some. You're right. It's not because of health risks. Let's put it that way. I think they are just afraid that things will get shut down, whether it's baseball or everything else around it, and they'll lose out on that playoff money. You know, if they thought they could play the playoffs in a place, you know, it's almost like you would kind of wonder if they would think about playing the playoffs as the bubble situation. You know, we had in Arizona or whatever. If you could take, I mean, you're looking at a lot of teams now because they're expanded the playoffs, but if you could take 12 teams or whatever it is and put them in a bubble, that's a little bit easier to manage than, you know, 30 teams. So, you know, would it be a situation where they would, you know, say, okay, we're going to play it a little bit later, but we're going to play it in LA or we're going to play it in Arizona, someplace that's not likely to have a lot and someplace that we can control this. And as teams drop out, then, you know, they go home and, you know, you get down to, by the World Series, you know, you only have two teams and you have a limited number of people that you have to try to keep healthy. Now, of course, if one of those teams comes down with it, then you're in problem. But and let's be honest. I mean, we saw Japan this week had to cancel exhibition game because a couple players caught the virus, even though they've been isolated for so long. So there is still a significant chance that players will get that. But, you know, it almost makes sense to some degree to do the inverse of what we've been seeing is playing your stadiums and then come together and have a neutral site playoff where you're playing games and you try to hurry them along. You know, you could play all four games a day, you know, or whatever.
Sure.
You know, and see if you can get the playoffs done in a couple of weeks rather than spacing it out.
Yeah. I mean, isn't that the NBA plan? Isn't it 8 games a day type deal?
Maybe. I'm not really sure.
It's 8 games a day. Secluded families, they get to bring their families with them, but they can't get out and about, like they can't go to Disneyland or anything like that. But I mean, that's basically what it is, a playoff, all in one playoff area. And there's an excitement level of that to me. I would like to see something like that. You know, it's probably just be it'd be 1 year, but I would hope, but you know, I don't know, I would kind of like to see some of these things happen. It seems so fairy tale for us to talk about right now because it seems so far away from actually seeing a pitch.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
So it was also interesting, I think, when the players sent their proposal over that they were willing to have expanded playoffs for 2 years, you know, and if you do expanded playoffs for 2 years, there's a better than zero chance that that becomes what the new norm is, right? I mean, once you've got it in there, you could have expanded playoffs forever. And I'm not a big fan of expanded playoffs, but you know, I was a little bit surprised that the ownership didn't, you know, at least get a little bit intrigued by that because again, more playoff games, more money. But they held firm on it. And that's what makes you start thinking they really just don't want to play this year. And whether it's financial because they can't see past this year, or because they're going to lose a lot of money anyway, or it's just trying to be tough for the CBA, whatever the situation, more and more it really feels like as much as they may say they want to play, they're not that interested in playing.
Yeah, I thought after Sunday night, after reading the player proposal, I thought, okay, now they're getting somewhere because this seems pretty realistic. To see it shot down, I was like, oh, what? And then hear the shortened season stuff, I really did think, I was like, this is almost lip service now to hear some of these figures that are coming out for, you know, 48 games. I keep going back to that to where it's like, it's almost insulting. And then I'll be the first person to be watching. You know, I mean, I know that. I mean, and that's the situation, but it is tough to swallow. Kind of what we're being spoon fed and it's disappointing and it's tough. You know, even last week, I probably may have even sounded a little more pro ownership than I wanted to, but that pendulum has kind of swung now to where I'm thinking, you know, this is just do or don't. You know, now you're just throwing out numbers that just don't even that make a lot of sense.
Yeah. I don't. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. You know, if it's frustrating for us, obviously it's very frustrating for the players. And we're seeing that this week, most notably with Jack Flaherty. And we'll get to some of other things that Flaherty's social media has had this week, maybe in a little bit. But I don't know if there is a player in baseball that I have seen that is as often and as obviously calling out the baseball owners. I mean, tweeting out things of, you know, they have no urge to play, and, you know, hey, look, the NBA's playing and we can't. And he spent a lot of time on this. It's really fascinating to see that. And I don't think any team member has kind of picked up on that yet. I think maybe a couple of players around the league have, but I haven't seen any other Cardinals be so open about that, I guess. What do you think about that? What do you think about Flaherty kind of arguing his case in the media?
In this day and time, it's refreshing to see the guys do it. Even with saying that, I cringe a little bit when you see him come out. It's super interesting to see with, you know, today's accessibility to social media, where players can do it and step out and say the things that they want. And, you know, it was one of those to where the comment that he made the other day, he goes, there are bigger things than baseball negotiations right now. And he kind of went on that, and he was super active. Was it last night? Was responding to a lot of people. I would love to be a fly on the wall with in an office with the DeWitts when those things come out. You know, it's easy to chalk it up to youth or to pat him on the back and say, hey, that's why we love you so much. You're willing to do that. You're willing to step up. But you do wonder in the back of your mind, I'm thinking, you know, we're not going to make it easy on this guy, and we could look away rather quickly, when that price point gets where we don't want to match. You know what I'm saying? And, a long answer, it's interesting to see, but I don't know how much that has to do with just the overall boredom of everyone's lives right now.
You know, it really is interesting for the players that are standing or are making a stand on this. And again, this is different than 94 because they can make their case straight to their followers. They can, you know, they can do the Instagram, they can do the Twitter, they can do whatever else there is, and really speak directly to the people that are following them. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that the people that are following them are going to, you know, agree with them or not say, hey, you ought to be playing or things like that. But they do have a chance to put out some information or make sure that the story is not one-sided, because sometimes it gets that way, right? I mean, it feels like there's a bias toward the ownership in a lot of the storytelling and a lot of the narratives that are out there. And this way the players can fight back a little bit on that without having to do it through, you know, other articles or stories. I mean, they can do it directly and in a language that people can understand to some degree too. I don't think I have any problem with him doing that at all. I obviously the DeWitts are not going to come out and say, yeah, we're all for you here. You know, that's understandable. But, you know, the benefit is for Jack Flaherty, and I know some people have drawn a comparison to Tommy Pham, who was very outspoken about things, not necessarily just about baseball, but, I mean, there were a lot of different things Tommy Pham was very outspoken about. And, of course, some people believe, and he probably played a little bit of a role, maybe not as much as some expected to have, in his trade to Tampa Bay. It may have also played a part in his trade from Tampa Bay to San Diego, although it sounds like more that the Tampa Bay is trying to get some value out of an asset. But the difference between Jack Flaherty and Tommy Pham, one, we've got to remember Tommy Pham wasn't hitting when he got traded. That's one thing. And two, there were a lot of players that needed to come up and play. We've still got a ton of outfielders. The Cardinals don't have anybody like Jack Flaherty. If Jack Flaherty is what Jack Flaherty is, he is, you know, a top 10 player pitcher in baseball. You don't have another one of those sitting on your farm. We don't know what Mathieu Liberatore is, but he's probably not that. And he's also one, if you were going to trade him, he's one of the most valuable contracts, you know, people out there. Even if he struggled coming out of the gate this year or next, whenever they actually play, he's still going to be, you know, one of those things where 29 teams in baseball are going to line up to try to trade for him. So the Cardinals have not been overly foolish about their assets in the past. They have not given people away in the situations like this. I mean, you could say Tommy Pham, but even Tommy Pham, even when he was down and not doing as well, you got, you know, Hennessy Cabrera out of that deal. So there's at least something there. So I think, in other words, a long way of saying, Jack Flaherty's not going anywhere because he's criticizing ownership. Mm-hmm. Especially because he's not criticizing the DeWitts by name. I mean, that also helps. But you know, I don't see them saying, oh man, we can't have this guy on our team. Now, like you said, when it comes to being a free agent, is that going to, you know, are they not going to want to go past a certain point because of the clubhouse? Maybe. I mean, you know, the Cardinals are not willing to go past a certain point anyway. That point just may drop a little bit because of some of that. But for the most part, you know, Jack Flaherty is pretty confident in where he's at and what he's doing. And that gives him the right to say these things about ownership and to take this kind of lead role in this younger generation coming up that are cognizant of, they're not just going to take what they can just so they can move up. They're going to fight for it. And that's really somewhat refreshing to see, because it could be very easy that you're going to wait for the veterans to, because they've got their money and so they can, you know, they've got the power. Flaherty's not going to wait around, and he's going to make his opinion known. And that's really, really interesting to see.
Sure. And it's refreshing to a point, to build off yours, is that I think it's a system that's broken that we didn't realize was broken until, you know, the stalemate of moving these free agents, to realize that these guys that over 30 are looked at as, you know, over the hill, and they were paid, you know, peanuts compared to their productivity in their younger days. And the push for that to change is coming quickly. And a lot of the younger players now realize that, hey, we don't have to take our lumps and do this because they're not paying us on the backside. The story forever was, you take your lumps in arbitration and then you go make your big contracts after that. Well, we've seen that that's not necessarily the case that much. You know, the Harper deals and all that proved to be bigger than what we expected were going to be, but it did take a long time for him to sign. And, you know, it's not difficult to draw a line between, you know, Bill DeWitt in Major League Baseball and being some of the issues or placeholder of some of these systems that really seem antiquated. So there's going to be some uncomfortable conversations. And if he's the spearhead to do that, you know, more power to him.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll see how the next generation of Cardinals comes up and if they take his lead. That's typically not the kind of player that the Cardinals have drafted, for whatever the, you know, take that as you will, but it doesn't seem like, but we'll see. I mean, it could be that we'll, you know, Flaherty will embolden some people to make some statements. Now, obviously, that's not the only thing that Jack Flaherty has been very vocal about this week. And he has been quite vocal about the Black Lives Matters and the protests and everything that is going on. And in that regard, you know, he is not alone. We've seen Adam Wainwright make statements as well. We've seen Dexter Fowler obviously be active in this regard as well. Probably maybe some others that I haven't seen or I don't remember. I think this is a situation where ownership would be smart to come out and say, we see what Jack Flaherty's doing and we support what Jack Flaherty's doing. And we agree with it. And, you know, basically just kind of throwing their weight a little bit behind that. You know, a lot of people were not happy with the statement that the Cardinals and the Blues put out. I did see Dexter Fowler retweet it with what seemed like a positive spin. So, you know, I guess take that for what it's worth. But I think this is a really good opportunity for the front office or whatever. And maybe they will this weekend, especially as John Mozeliak goes to the radio shows and stuff like that. But I think this would be a really good, a smart opportunity to get behind these players and say, look, this is, we're with them on this. We understand the importance of this and we appreciate what they're doing to bring this out to the, into the public. So I don't know that they will, but it'd probably be a good idea if they did.
Yeah, it would be nice to see. It's everything is, you know, so tough to judge right now and words are picked apart and you kind of wonder if it's not in the, you know, the public relations machine to make sure how they word that the best that they can, but it would be nice to see that, to back the guys up and show a bit of unity, you know, where it's definitely needed.
Yeah. And, you know, we could use a lot of unity right now. So
it's crazy times.
It really is. You know, I don't know that there's anything else. Again, we continue to just kind of wait and see on what these owners and players are going to do. And right now, you know, I'm sure there was this kind of animosity and some kind of very almost blunt language among the teams and the players back in the strike zone era. But it feels like to me, and I noticed it more in this off season when MLB and the minor leagues were kind of arguing in the press over press releases. Press releases are much more, blunt, I guess is a really word to say. They don't put a whole lot of, you know, subtlety into what they're trying to say these days. They pretty much just say, you're cheating us. And we don't like it. They don't seem to work around it. And I don't know. I think it's very, I don't know if that's just a product of society. I don't know if that's just, you know, being able to see it more. Maybe it's just trying to be more direct, but it's really interesting to see, like I said, they did it with the minor leagues. Minor leagues really came out, which slammed them quite a bit, you know, before this whole thing came down, but to see them, you know, back and forth with the players right now and in a situation of, you know, they're not really sugarcoating a lot of things. So I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's, I guess it makes for a little bit more interesting reading than normal.
Yeah, that's they are pretty direct of all the, you know, the first thing you hear of it in PR is that, you know, people hate, you know, the professionals hate to do the press release, but they've gotten pretty good at it because they're pretty direct to the point nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, then we'll settle this and say they're losing a ton of money. They're going to have to show the players the financials.
Yeah.
Financial statements. And that's, they're not willing to do that. And I get that there's some stuff and there's some ideas that they want to give out to the players going into the new CBA, but look, they're not going to take your word for that you're losing this. In fact, the players, I was reading this, you know, the article on the Athletic right now, you know, their contention, I don't know if it's true or not, was that the owners are still receiving payments from the regional cable networks. And if that's the case, I mean, because I've kind of thought, okay, you know, Fox Sports Midwest isn't playing the Cardinals because there are no games on. But if they are, I mean, that's got to really shoot down a lot of what the owners are saying, right? Because they're getting that money still and not paying salaries. You know, I don't know how you can say you're losing that much.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I hadn't heard that. But that's pretty crazy. I heard something interesting today about how, you know, the new ownership in Kansas City is footing the bill out of his pocket to pay minor leaguers throughout the rest of the year, because he hasn't really made any money because he took over in the off season and whatnot. But that would seem to make a lot of sense if that were the case, you know, and not to to, you know, shine a light on what I would think is complete negative, because I would hope for the best that he's doing it just because he just bought the ball club and doesn't want to come off that he didn't want to. But if they are getting money on the backside, that those checks would seem to be much easier to write.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that that's true. I know. Yeah. I think Jason Stark said earlier in the year that it kind of depended on the contract, and some may and some may not. And maybe I'm misreading, but that's what it, you know, at least that was the players in contention. And again, if that's true, you know, they're going to have to show where they're losing their money. And that's, I mean, that's part of the deal. I mean, 10 years ago, maybe these sides would have been able to trust each other a little bit more, and maybe we would have something, but it's gotten to the point now that there's not. I mean, there's not any trust there, and so they're not just going to take a couple pieces of paper and say, oh, yeah, we're losing this much money. They're going to want to see all the documentation, and if MLB's not going to give it to them, we're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough situation, and it's really tough to overlook. It may add to more of my skepticism of these are things that have never been shown and probably need to have been, and I just don't know if it ever will.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've tried to go an hour. it's difficult. We've also tried to understand. We got a review this last week that talking about the volume levels. We're working on that. So tweet at us this week. If this is better, if it's not any better, if we're still two difference between myself and Alan, if the volume levels are too much lower, let us know. Again, I'm C70. That's A Medlock One. You can maybe meet me at Mutual as well. You know, let us know, because we do want to try to get this better. We'll keep working at it, you know, for the fact that we're using free software and neither one of us are technically advanced. You know, we're just kind of lucky to get it out there at some points in time. But, and then some weeks we don't, because things blow up, but let us know, and let us know if there's something you want us to talk about, especially, you know, again, I know we talked about this earlier in the year and there were some suggestions of, you know, looking back at a 96 team or something, some other teams, and maybe we'll have to do that, because, you know, Alan, I mean, if they don't settle this in the next, well, by the time we do the show next week, if they're not in a settlement, I think we can just kind of assume that there's not going to be a season.
Yeah, we were under the impression that these next 2 weeks, the end of, end of next week is going to be tough. And yeah, it's tough to see, without a doubt.
Yeah, because, I mean, they were looking at, as I read this letter, you know, the original idea was to get spring training open up by the 10th. Well, that's Wednesday.
Yeah.
And we obviously aren't going to have that happen. So, you know, if they're still fussing and fighting by next Friday, then it seems pretty likely nothing's really going to happen. And we'll need something to talk about between then. I mean, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel sometimes, and it, you know, kind of going around the same circles. So if they actually do cancel the season, then we'll have to go forward otherwise. So if you've got ideas, let us know. But until then, that is Alan. I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Suter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss. And that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.